Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Rebecca Atkinson-Lord. Welcome to The Legacy Tapes. This is a series of conversations exploring ideas of legacy and how to leave something behind in the ephemeral medium of theatre. I'm here today at Camden People's Theatre talking to Ian Bloomfield, the Artistic Director of Theatre in the Mill in Bradford. Right. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
So when you started in your current job at Theatre in the Mill, because you've been through lots of different iterations of what you do, what was it that you wanted to achieve? What did you have an idea of what you thought you wanted to leave behind when you left?
Yeah, I think I did. A very definite, if not wholly formed, plan. I've worked in reps, I directed in reps, I'd run a venue before, which was attached to number one touring venue, and had a kind of education outreach and a theatre company and kind of Asian provision attached to that. I'd run my own company, or at least I was a part of a theatrical cooperative, and I kind of knew all of that had sort of formed fairly strong ideas about what I wanted to do, and that was sort of change how theatre was done, change how it was made, change what it, well, I think focus, not necessarily change, but focus what it was there for. And I kind of very much into the idea that theatre is a place where we come together to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't seem to be informing how work was made particularly.
Okay, so can you tell me, because you, from what to what, you're changing from how was it and how did you want it to be?
Well, shows banged out in 3 weeks and then turned endlessly. Work that kind of didn't seem to, this is really overstating the point, I think, but it's work that didn't seem to care massively about its audience.
Mm-hmm.
Work that was done for people rather than with people. I think we got into a very, I don't think I was defining it at this time, but kind of very neoliberal capitalist exchange about work.
Mm.
And actually talking to Chris Goode a number of years ago kind of crystallised that for me. Let's not remake capitalism. I think we really were.
Yeah.
And kind of making shiny things in exchange for guilt.
Money.
And, you know, I don't think theatre started off from that point. I don't think at its most powerful moments it has been about that.
Mm.
So I was increasingly uncomfortable with just the sausage factory-ness of it, really.
Yeah.
And also, the venue was very much a new writing venue, and I'm not a particularly writer. In fact, I'm banging my head till it's bloody on a desk trying to actually write a play at the moment because I didn't want to write for devising, but I can't with this one. Certainly in this iteration of the piece. But I'm very aware that theatre doesn't just start from writers, it starts from all sorts of different places. So I wanted the theatre to be able to really celebrate that and to really talk with audiences about the significance of work or otherwise, how it lands with them, why it lands with them, what the politic of it is, and to really celebrate the fact that theatre is a political thing. It's a place where we come together to think collectively, and that seemed to also be being lost. So it wasn't just theatre that was losing that, it was the world that was losing those collective places of thinking. And I think that would be pretty deliberate.
Yeah, because then we can't collectively think this is shit, let's change it.
Absolutely. You know, we're very sort of much being, you know, kind of being driven apart. And I think the work was reflecting that, to be honest.
And it feels like the work that you've been... I mean, I can see that change. That's not the work that you make at all. And that's not how you make work. So, well done. Brilliant. Good achievement. Do you see a wholesale change or a really notable change in the wider ecology in terms of... Because I'm really aware, knowing some of the people that you work with, like, that they do make work with people, not for people, and all of those things you're doing. Do you think there's still a sense of neoliberal, capitalist sausage-making in the rest of the ecology, or do you think that's changing?
I think it's changing... slowly, and there are bits of it that are still there. I was at a Theatre Review meeting in the Arts Council a little while ago. There was a very sharp divide in the room between those who were thinking of social capital and those who weren't thinking of social capital. And, you know, that's nobody's fault. I think the funding system pushes people towards, you know, we were told that NPO was going to allow us to thrive, not survive, and it hasn't delivered that, I don't think. So there are certain places and spaces where I'm sure it's the very fact of the financial bottom line that pushes them towards that. But there was a very, very, very clear divide in the room, quite shocking. Half the room talking about ticket yield and half the room talking about people.
So I spend my whole life banging my head against that brick wall, and recently had a series of conversations about this shouldn't go in the podcast. Recently had a series of conversations about the future of an art centre, a regional art centre, and what the future should look like. And there was at no point in the conversation any acceptance that art and business had to happen in symbiosis. It was all about, let's have a really great shop and let's make money. And then if you want to tiddle around the corners with some of your arty shit, that's fine. But because you're attached to a university. So do you find, is that less agonizing for you?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and I'm hugely grateful, and I do absolutely understand that, you know, I and whoever follows me has been given an enormous opportunity to think differently because we're free of those constraints. We were set up in the radical 60s. We're a white heat of technology university. We're a science and technology university. There's no arts degrees there at all. Certainly no performing or fine arts degrees there at all. But our founding vice chancellor was a mate of Harold Wilson's and a card-holding member of the Communist Party, who just thought that it was really important that artists and the way artists think had a presence in both the city and the university. And they set up fellowships, and those fellowships have turned into venues. And we've been really seriously, you know, financially supported to be able to do that. And I think the university has forgotten periodically why we're there. But I think if I've had any success at the university, it's reminding them that that's the case and that matters. but again, the old model kind of wasn't working because it wasn't really creating the space to think. It was putting a lot of things in front of people to let them make of it what they wish, which is kind of one way of thinking, but it's not. It's not necessarily a useful way.
It's not
thinking.
A muscular way of thinking.
No, absolutely. And, you know, obviously Bradford is is famously multicultural. And there's a radical politic going on in that city, and there always has been. It's always been a place of sort of radical thinking, whether that radical... that radical thinking... has always been troublesome, and it continues to be troublesome. But history kind of teaches us that the troublesome thinking of today becomes the what we know tomorrow. So a place that offers a place of conversation around some of those troubling ideas.
It's vital.
It's absolutely vital. And, you know, we regularly get threatened for what we do, which is always fun.
How do you... really threatened?
Yeah, threatened with being burnt down and stuff. I mean, it never happens, but...
touch all the wood.
Touch all the wood.
How does that feel?
Well, I think...
like you're doing it right, I guess.
I think, well, yeah, you're doing it right. And it's, you know, it's not one side or the other. It's periodically, absolutely everybody has a... which, you know, again, that's exactly what we should be. You know, we should be prodding people. Come on. Think better about it. So let's just have a look at it. You know, you can't move forward unless you actually take seriously what your opponent thinks. Really think about it seriously. And I think the left in particular, although I think all shades of political opinion have gotten very, very flabby about really thinking about what they think and what other people think and treating that with some respect. So to be a kind of troublesome space is a thorough joy, actually.
It's a great word, troublesome. I really like that.
It's the artists we work with are almost without exception really care. So they're not asking questions to be difficult, they're asking difficult questions. And sometimes coming up with conclusions or solutions. Well, no, it's never a solution, is it? They get a conclusion that, you know, is troubling. And a brilliant show, Pauline Mayer's What If I Told You, which was about what it's like to be black and repeatedly invisible. But the discussion kind of went into areas of... because we were talking quite frankly in the room about race and... definitions of race and historicity of race. And we kind of got to then to sort of talking about race in relation to gender. And again, hugely, hugely, hugely kind of troubling, powerful. You know, what if there is, you know, in the same way as we start to question gender binaries, you know, there are very few people who are purely black or purely white. You know, so actually... just started to talk about spectrums on that, started to liberate a really, really interesting...
And actually, discussion. Within a generation, everybody will be... there will genuinely be, pardon the crudity, but a Pantone scale of people. Yeah. And there's no way that you can kind of polarise identity anymore. And how do we tell stories in ways that work for everyone? But then also, how do you serve... because that means that everyone has a different... need, and it's so much easier when people behave nicely and sit in boxes. Damn them! I think that's what's really exciting in the next generation.
But I think I was listening to the Velvet Underground on the way down here, and I kind of just got thinking that all sorts of songs about transgendered people that Lou Reed was writing in the mid to late 60s. You know, radical art has that place. It does that thinking years and years and years and years before the rest of the world sort of catches up with them. And that's its value.
And you get to be genuinely radical at Bradford. That's the brilliance of it.
Yeah, because we're offered this, you know, we're offered the space. Because it's a, you know, because it's a university, but because it's not, because we're not part of the taught provision. Now, I've and again, this is not kind of knocking any other, you know, any other venue, but those spaces that do house taught provision kind of have to sit within a kind of curriculum and a, you know, and just the shape that a curriculum gives you, we can go absolutely anywhere, do absolutely anything, with no reference to anything other than a place to play, a place to think. Mm. I'm really kind of anti also the idea that, you know, that kind of romantic notion that artists think great thoughts and then turn those great thoughts into great things. There's a lot more of the artisan to everything than we allowed for a very, very long time. You know, which is why, whilst I'm not anti written work, you know, I think the way we had got towards to treating writers within the theatre got really problematic. You know, there was an only begetter of work, and how dare you question it?
And actually, anybody in that space is creating the meaning, including the audience and the cat that wanders in.
Absolutely, and you know, again, one of the defining points of the work that I program, and it comes out of sort of personal interest, is just the liveness of the experience. How much are you either sitting there or walking through it or holding a piece of paper, yay or nay, up about it? How much are you actually present in the room, and how much does your presence count? And that seems to me, and you can do that, so, you know, sitting in the dark watching something, it's perfectly possible to do that, as much as it is to, you know, walk through tunnels. But it's got to be important.
It's got to be a reciprocity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you another question now. How do you think, like, in terms of when you're thinking about what you're doing and what you're programming and the art you want to make and support... Do you think in terms of day-to-day success, or do you think in terms of long-term impact? Like, are you shooting for now, or are you shooting for 20 years?
Both. Or neither.
Excellent. Explain.
There are some people you just have to open a door for. And they will pop out. I'm Selena Thompson's there.
Yeah.
A perfect example of that.
Yes, you know? And they will storm through the door.
They will storm through the door and conquer
everything in front of it,
as soon as they get there. But there are other people who it just takes longer for them to work on what they mean and you know, where they get there. We did, and it's, you know, it's not necessarily about the art, but about the model and the models of engagement. I remember one artist, she could play to 8 people a night. A really, really, really tiring show, so she could only do a show every other night. I had a hilarious conversation with her afterwards about, you know, how you turn that into a sustainable business model. Well, you don't, do
no.
you?
No.
But what she got from that, she's turning into much bigger, much more kind of people-engaging processes. So she kind of needed to do some working out around that. So it absolutely depends on the artist. But, you know, what... defining questions of artists when, you know, they say, you know, they ask me if they want to work at the mill, I kind of, why here? Why Bradford? Why this particular space? And also, you know, what are you going to get out of this?
Yeah.
What's your intention? What are you trying to do? So I'll happily work with, you know, people that are just really kind of beginning to think. I program to people I've never seen, and I do that because I kind of think I've got quite good at sitting down and just having a conversation with people. Because almost everybody's got one bloody brilliant show.
Yeah. And also there's a thing...
So actually, if you start talking principles,
yeah,
not immediate practice and stuff you see...
Yeah.
Then I think you're into much, 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 much richer territory.
Yeah.
So... you know, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to go? What are you trying to sort of say? What are you exploring? If you have, if you're doing this because we're a kind of development space, what questions have you got around the work? Why are you sharing that with an audience? Because the conversation with an audience is not, it's, you know, it's absolutely vital, but if somebody says, I don't want to do that, I have taken on pieces of work and I've done that, but I kind of always question them because I kind of go, well, why then are you... There are any number
of spaces... Why can't you do this alone in your bedroom?
Why can't you do this alone? I mean, it's not that they don't necessarily... They haven't got stuff to share and thoughts to share, but I kind of wonder why theatre's the form for them.
Yes.
So what questions have you got? What questions have you got an audience, and what will do in your piece, do you think?
Mm.
How will that take it forward? Because, in fact, I'm getting more militant as I get older about the work shouldn't be finished. It shouldn't be finished at Theatre in the Mill, because actually it doesn't then present a shiny face to an audience.
Yeah.
It presents a...
A question.
A fractured thing, porous is probably the better word, porous space in which you can have a meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
If you've done your thinking, well, you've done your thinking, but that's not for us. And there are any number of spaces in which you can show your word. So I've got more militant about not taking in work that is in development, unless I'm really, really, really sure that it's going to add something to the conversation. Because I kind of think that what I'm trying to do is not put together a programme of work, but sort of stimulate a kind of multifaceted conversation between artists, between people, between the city and the university, between all sorts. What is this world in which we live? Why on earth are we doing what we're doing it?
That's really interesting, because I quite often ask artists, if I'm an audience member and I this thing that you don't know what it is, how do you want it to change me? How do you want me to leave changed? Because that's the question, right? Yeah. And actually, I really rarely ask them, how are you going to leave changed? And I should.
Mm.
I wonder why I haven't been doing that. I'll steal that off you.
Yeah,
thanks.
It's all creative commons, all of it.
Yeah.
Because, it's not, I said I had an idea, but actually it comes out of the longer it's gone on, the more I've had conversations with other artists. And there are sort of several people involved in that, people like Alan Lane from Slung Low, Richie Warburton from Invisible Flock. They've all been really central to just kind of working out what, if we're doing it.
Say fuck, it's great, we can do that.
Okay, cool. Yes, what the fuck we're doing, and what the fuck it means. And,
yeah.
And, we kept it quiet for a very, very long time, because I don't think, either the funders, of the funders would have let us do it if they knew what we were trying to do. Because it did, it was so different to what was understood,
yeah.
I think. I mean, this is 13 years ago. And certainly, there certainly were sort of spaces elsewhere, but in the north of England, particularly in a city like Bradford, that starts to look pretty dangerous, particularly 2 years after really, really, really major riots.
Mm.
To create a space that's deliberately problematic and politically radical and give spaces to,
where they actually could burn you down.
Would have been problematic. But actually, our politicians perpetually tell us that there are things that we can't think about, and the reasons for those riots happening were things
because we're not allowed to fucking think about
them. Yeah, we're not allowed to think about
and
why
talk
that
about
happens.
Them in a collective
absolutely.
Space.
Absolutely. But actually, we've got, the University of Bradford has the world's first peace studies department. So radical the fact you tried to shut it down in the 80s, So there is a history, and their kind of fellow travellers around, real deep engagement. But I think art gives you, it's no better or worse than academia, but it just gives a different context and a different space, which I think allows you to think differently. I worry sometimes about the world of academia, that it doesn't necessarily offer too many spaces for genuine radical thinking.
And also, I think, radical feeling, because we have this ridiculous thing where reason is separate from emotion and instinct, and that's complete bullshit. All of our intellectual decisions are made instinctively, it's just then we put an intellectual framework on them. And I really think that you can affect change so much more effectively through allowing someone to experience and feel and respond and then go, what the hell is that?
We've got a really definite process of talking to audiences about work, and it always starts off with essential. What did you see? What did you hear? What did you...
smell even, that will stick with you.
Yeah.
That you will carry away with you. And then, so how did that make you? What do those things make you feel? I'm very much of the opinion that we sense, we emote, we intellectualise.
Mm.
It's kind of...
Yeah.
It's from your groin through your heart to your head, you know? And I think that's what the arts can do really well.
Yeah. And I think, I wonder if there's a parallel. I'm thinking out loud, this isn't a formed thought yet. And I wonder if there's a parallel between the desire, the urge to package things in that intellectual, I can explain this in a soundbite way. I mean, of course there is. And the sausage factory, you know, the selling. Because if you don't know what something is, you can't sell it. You can't put a price on it. So there has to be, in order to make work that really genuinely communicates and connects in those visceral ways, it's almost impossible to then do that and be a part of a consumerist model, right? Mm. So they're screwing us over at every turn with this making money lark.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, they are, and they're doing it because we're bought and sold. You know, we hanker after the empty, so we don't. And we've been taught to for a long time.
Mm. I'm going to ask you another question. You've talked about how you arrived at Theatre in the Mill as you are now and knew what you wanted to change and it was going to be different, and you really have. I don't really think of it as an in-writing place or anything at all, but so it's obviously changed massively to align with your aesthetic. Do you ever feel a tension between you, the artist, as an individual, and what you might want and what your agenda might be, and the organisation and what it might want and what its agenda might be?
I think, again, one of the lovely things about Theatre in the Mill coming out of fellowships is it really has been a space for, firstly, practising artists to be running the play.
Mm.
And then secondly, for them to be pursuing their own particular agendas and having their own particular aesthetics and this, that and the other. And that will and should change when I go. So within that particular environment, has there been a tension? No, not particularly, because I've commissioned and otherwise supported a huge range of work, some of which I didn't personally like. You know, and it's my absolute right to not like stuff. But equally, I'm not going to go, if I think you are onto something, whether I personally it's a form, this, that and the other, that I go with or not, I will support you to make it, because it's absolutely your right to make that particular piece of work. The only thing, I guess the only defining thing was, what are you trying to learn? What are you exploring here? What, why, and how does having a conversation with people who aren't you
help?
Am I a huge fan of contemporary dance? No, I am not.
But we have co-commissioned some contemporary dance.
Some contemporary dance, and you know, most of it I've absolutely bloody loved when it's in process.
Mm.
Because actually, any contemporary dancer who wishes to engage with the what are your questions and how does it engage people is a this is going to get me in so much trouble, but it's a pretty out there contemporary dance artist, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, what do you think? Do you know what your legacy at the Mill is? What do you think it might be?
Well, I mean, it's not me, but we certainly saved the place. They were huge. When I took it over, it wasn't DDA compliant. It had a gap in leadership, and that had led to the place being in a really, really crappy state of repair. we persuaded the university to put, you know, a chunky amount of money into it. We have really placed it within the university, so the university absolutely understands what its benefit is. And that's not me inventing anything, that's me actually going, our founding fathers did this for a reason,
yeah.
This is the reason, and the reason isn't about giving shows to people. It's about being another
investigatory
space.
Tool.
Absolutely. You know, where students and anyone else, and that's a radical thing, you know, because we have no theatre students, really. Yeah. It's just, you know, we've got all our front of house staff are students at the university, and they're biomedical science students, they're archaeologists, they're engineers, they're physiotherapists.
But it's the principle that this art shit, it's a really useful medium for any human being to think about stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whoa.
Absolutely. And, you know, thank God for the 60s. And thank God, you know, and I have been trying to, you know, recreate that, you know, that permissiveness in the 60s isn't about sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually about permission to think so.
Yeah, possibility.
Possibility and opportunity. Mm. And that's what the founding fathers of the University of Bradford wanted, and all I'm doing is... But, you know, we've really powerfully reminded the university about that, and they have found all sorts of, you know, ways to use it, some of which are purely commercial, but, you know, because now that education is marketised...
Now that young people are... I mean, they're products, aren't they?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, I have a place, and that place is honoured by those who sit around me in the Directorate of External Affairs in which we sit, and, you know, I am given a place as a voice of radical dissent, and I am listened to. Genuinely listened to.
God, that's special.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. But it's, you know, it's, we've been very politely saying that that's how it needs to be for years and years and years and years and years. And, you know, and they've listened. And, you know, they've funded a radical arts provision for the last 50 years. It's off to them.
Remarkable.
It is remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
Is there anywhere else? I don't feel like there's anywhere else.
No, I think we're absolutely unique as far as I can. Absolutely unique. I'm not 100% sure they get quite unique, but, you know, yeah. We're standing there with placards going, you do understand that there is nowhere else like this, and you've, you know, you let this happen. And you let this happen because actually...
Possibly by accident, but he did it anyway.
No, the founding was absolutely deliberate. Absolutely, totally deliberate. It slipped under the net for many, many years because they had forgotten why it was important.
Yeah.
You know, Ted Edwards was a remarkable, remarkable human being.
Do you think if they'd remembered why it was important... that there would have been periods where they'd have worked harder to squish it.
Yes. Yeah, any question. But it became too, you know, it became too... I mean, we've gone through periods where, frankly, it was just too embarrassing to get rid of us. which is fine. I can live with that. But, I think one of my legacies is that, you know, we're in a very, very, very much more powerful position as to the why of that, and the university understanding the why of that. But that's at least partly because, my current boss is, you know, he's a remarkable man, and he's really big into customer relationship management and stakeholder management and all that absolute bullshit, except for, he goes, who are your stakeholders? Who do you have to include in a conversation? And actually you start framing it in those ways, you go, okay, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Kind of what I'm doing. So, you know, we're making sure they absolutely understand. They come and see work.
Yeah. And they come and see it.
And they come and see it.
Which is amazing.
And they have conversations with the Arts Council, with artists, and this, that, and the other. And sometimes it utterly leaves them baffled, but they do, you know, they do get why it matters. And, you know, we've started to have great, great, great success with... putting artists and academics in a room together. So the university is starting to see how actually artists and academics talking to each other can push the boundaries of research.
Yeah.
And we've had Ellie Harrison. We've got recently appointed anniversary chair of end-of-life studies, a guy called Alan Kelly. We've got a dementia unit and palliative care unit, health studies department. A really, really kind of radical thinker from Australia. And sat him and Ellie Harrison, who's making the Grief series, in a room together and just, you know, she came way out of her way to thank me for just making that introduction, because they were just hitting real, genuine, creative sparks off each other. And there's such power in those. And that connectivity that kind of happens out of the room just because it's a place of thinking. And it's a conversation. It's not necessarily a conversation that I curate all of. I curate bits of it and go, oh, you need to be speaking to, you know, them. And because I don't see it, I think, as a programme of work, I see it as a pool of stuff.
there's a hand gesture there implying some sort of nebulous blancmange.
That it's really easy to go, you know, you can't ride a tiger. You cannot ride a tiger. And then any attempt to ride a tiger is
foolish.
So don't attempt to ride the tiger. Try and, you know, create interesting things for the tiger to do so it doesn't bloody eat you, you know?
Yeah.
That's taking the analogy far too far. But, you know, it's all chaos as far as that goes. And that chaos is a brilliant thing.
But chaos is useful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this zips off there and, you know, that zips off, you know, in another way. And they're things we've done. And it couldn't have happened if we didn't do what we did.
Yeah.
But it's not ours. The other thing is, we commission and we do not ask a red cent. We take the box office when a show's in development with us, unless it's an open space, which is early stages, and then the artist, we don't give any money, so they get 100% of
the
box office now. When we've actually commissioned, we take the box office, but every single penny of that work after they've left our space is theirs. We do not ask any kind of commission or anything on that, because it's my job.
Which is absolutely the right thing.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the right thing, and it's absolutely not what we're supposed to do.
No.
Like, I personally have written that clause into a contract and hated myself for it.
Yeah. No,
the warhorse clause.
Yeah. My job is to... somebody asked me, somebody came from the financial sector, what I did. I went, and she eventually said, oh, so you deal in arts futures then?
Yes! Deal in arts futures, that's it.
I kind of went, because actually my job is to find ways in which my venue can benefit from the great work that comes out of it.
The great work that might potentially come out of it.
Absolutely. And looking back, you know, looking at our past record, there's a constant record of great stuff coming out of our plays. But I don't ask anything financially of anyone afterwards, other than they talk well of us, you know.
Yeah, and they all do.
Yeah. Because those financial models matter. It's not my work. I've created a space and created a conversation around my work, but it's not my work. It's their work.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, again, as far as legacy goes, you can't ride a tiger and you shouldn't even try. You know, whatever happens artistically with that space after I've left is purely the responsibility
of whoever takes
it over. And, you know, I will have, my legacy will be a venue in a really strong position with a huge amount of freedom to do as you wish. An indication that should be inclusive. I've just, you know, I've passed the baton on. That's it. Whatever happens. I set up a theatre co-op from university and socialist theatre co-op in 1984. And, you know, once I walked away from that, it was 10 years work, but once I walked away from that, I never looked back. It's somebody else's. It's a wholly different piece now. But it's theirs, not mine.
we talk a lot. I feel like quite often we stray into, you know, everything should be more socialist and then the world would be better whenever we speak. Do you have hope? Like, some, because I had a conversation with the chair of a board of a place the other day, and he said something like, you know, what do you envisage? What do you think the future will be like? And there's a bit of me that's like, I think in the future we're all just going to be killing ourselves because it's grim. But also, if you look at political theory, you know, social movements go in cycles, and we're really ripe for a more collective, socially minded, human way of being. Let's just hang on till we get there. Do you have hope that, like,
I was a political adult, and, you know,
but you still are.
Yes, but I was a political adult in 79.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I went through the Thatcher cycle, which was more veiled than this, but more ruthlessly anti-art, much more ruthlessly anti-art. I mean, you know, it turns out that 97 wasn't the victory we thought it was. It was just a, you know, continuation by other means.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at what's happening in politics, and I kind of go, well, yeah, huge amounts of potential. We're not there yet. We're a long way from there. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. But there are, I think there are loads and loads of sort of shoots of possibility and opportunity. And we need to just be brighter about it, cleverer about it, more thoughtful about it, and actually find ways in which you can, you know, I don't stand up and shout at arts meetings.
I don't.
It's... success is my best revenge. But, it, you know, I think the Theatre Review will turn up some very interesting stuff around how work is made and how it's not made and where profit sits within that.
Because it's a massively exploitative model right now.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, we'll see what comes, but I think, you know, proof and puddings and this, that and the other is that it ain't necessarily that model that's nurturing. And what we nurture now will in 10, 20 years' time be the mainstream, mostly. And I think the Arts Council probably had a bit of a wake-up call with some of the things that were said there, and, you know, and I could have been shouting about this 10 years ago, but it's much better to have...
But now you've got a perfect model to go, look.
Yeah.
Don't have to shout. No. Right.
Absolutely. And this is why. And this is why, you know, you create spaces in which possibility is... It's also, you know, what is subsidy for? What is, you know, arts investment for? What's it for? Because too often it seems to be keeping failing business models in operation.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You're not good enough at being commercial.
Maintaining the status quo.
Absolutely. And, you know, there isn't a rigor of thinking around, you know, around how we do that, what it's for, what it means. There isn't joined up thinking around fundraising around any of those things, you know.
And fundraising around marketing or around how we...
Absolutely.
Audience development and engagement.
Any of those things, it's just completely, you know, not linked up and therefore unrealistic. You know, it's doomed to failure because things do not link up. The thinking does not link up.
So... Because you, I mean, you sort of got this job by stealth. You didn't tell them you were going to be doing all this radical world
changing stuff. I also didn't want it. I also really didn't want it. I'd run a venue before and thoroughly hated the experience. And if I hadn't lost £9,000 worth of work in Bangladesh, I wouldn't have bloody done it. But, you know, I'd had all the shots and everything. It was just kind of booking flights and it all fell through. I needed to find something to do. And I went, I could do it for a couple of years. And then you don't, do you? You start getting interested.
Because you care.
And actually, if I'm going to run a theatre, I'm going to...
Do it well.
Well, and just do it differently. Because I don't want to be made that unhappy again.
Yeah.
And actually, I am in a space. I have been offered this. And I've been hugely fortunate throughout my life of, you know, partners supporting me to, you know, to do this, that and the other. And finding myself in a space where a university will support me to, even if by stealth, to, you know, to do the thinking that I need to do. And that's what worries me, actually, about the future is... Because we, you know, we're creating a world where there isn't that generosity around.
Mm.
Your turn now.
Yeah, and also there's such fear. Like I find myself having a lot of conversations. The question I asked you about what when you took the job, what did you want your legacy to be? Because that's the question they ask you in all of the interviews, right? In 5 to 10 years, where do you see this organisation being? And I can't ever. I mean, I always have this question in my head: do I tell you the truth? Do I tell you the thing that I think it should be and I want to do? Or do I lie to you so you give me the job and look like I'm, you know, look like I'm just going to invest in the cafe?
I was actually, I think, fairly honest at interview.
Mm.
But then I was, you know, I wasn't necessarily in front of a panel who really knew what they were talking about. My social media presence, as you well know, is very sweary and you know,
yes.
And kind of shouty and opinionated. But actually, I'm very kind, I think, in person.
Mm.
I don't often, you know, like I don't stand up often and shout at meetings. I don't kind of get irate like that. Mm. I do always sort of seek to go, how can we help you, you know, with what you want to do by what we do? I'm not going to change what we do, but I'm really willing to think around how it might fit in with what you do. And that, I think, is, you know, is kind of useful. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I lied at all. I probably didn't let them know just how radical it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just something I've been thinking about recently is that, you know, because everyone's so risk averse, actually what the world and the ecology and the artists need is for people not to be.
That's just dopey. I mean, being risk averse is dopey, you know. Good business.
Business. You can't go in and go, you're all idiots, do what I say.
In difficult circumstances, good business, you know, does not pull its horns in.
Mm. No.
Businesses that pull their horns in fail.
They die. Yeah.
You know, we are perpetually told to think in terms of business models and this, that, and the other, and business practice and this, that, and the other. And it doesn't seem to ever get beyond income and expenditure. It doesn't ever actually look at models. It doesn't ever
organisational culture.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and actually you look at, say, the arts in America, how they're funding, how they engage in this, that and the other, is done in very different ways. And, you know, not necessarily with any less good intention.
There's an interesting thing in that one of the things that I always worry about when it comes to private philanthropy is that I don't believe that most people know what needs to be made. I don't know what needs to be made.
No.
Only the dude that's making it knows.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to convince anyone. Really, there's a bit of me that thinks maybe it should all just be on a lottery. Maybe there's no, maybe we don't do any of this form filling bullshit. Let's just give 50 people a year X amount of money. See what happens. How bad can it be?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm not pitching that as a strategy. I haven't costed that adequately. But
as far as that goes, you know, I think in many ways my job is to be the umbrella so that the shit doesn't fall on the artist.
Mm.
My job is to have those conversations and to go, radical thinking here matters because it's important that we think. It's important that we create spaces. You know, you're fairly hard-nosed if you disagree with those things, actually. It's important that, you know, but equally, the radical artist saying difficult things isn't just somebody standing on a soapbox and saying, I think. It's about them putting ideas in front of other people. Mm. Very often people who are engaged in really profound ways with the things that are being talked about, and that thinking is critiqued and questioned. And you see, in a way, that's how you...
Yeah.
You can, you know, that's how you mollify, I suppose, or yeah. You know, or handle those questions about, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know we put in place a process that if anyone says anything too unsubstantiated and outrageous, they're going to get
squished.
They're going to get squished because we've created a space in which you don't like. You don't have to like the work. You know, it almost matters to me nothing if you personally like or dislike the work, as long as you are respectful of it and you talk about, if it's not working for you, exactly why is it not working for you. We will go into those things and into those things and into those things, because that's the most useful intelligence I think an artist can get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have to like the work. You don't have to believe what the artist is saying because they have an opinion that.
But you have to have the conversation.
You have to have the conversation, and you have to be respectful of the fact that nobody's gone into that room to fuck up.
Yeah.
Everybody's just doing, you know, just doing their best, and that can be, you know, your audience member trying to
work out
what they're saying and like what they mean, and all this, that, and the other, or the artist going, "I believe that."
Yeah. So quickly, briefly, because we've been talking for a while now, talk to me about audiences, because I think often audiences are the club, bizarrely, because they're our teammates, right? But they're so often used as the club with which to beat down anything radical or dangerous or challenging or risky or any of those words that people are frightened of. Or, you know, there's an assumption that audiences, that there is no audience or there isn't a significant audience for radical, difficult, challenging, complex, chewy work.
No, but if you operate a marketing practice, which is essentially the Habsburgs in operation, more people like, you know, people who are like the people we know, do you end up with an enormous chore and not able to read, don't you? And, you know.
Yes.
So, isn't there an audience for it? Well, they're probably not reached by the means that we.
Yeah. I think that there's a massive audience for radical, challenging, chewy, difficult, blah, blah, blah work. I think that what there isn't is a way to talk to them. There isn't like small pockets, but I don't think as an ecology, we fucking know how to talk to the people we want to talk to.
Because we just want money from them.
We want money from them, and then we want to be able to sit and do our little thing.
No. We want to be a shop. We want to be a shop. We want to sell art. That's what we want to do. I mean, essentially, we're a fucking great big gift shop.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are mugs and there are tea towels and there are this, that and the other and, you know.
And there are bijou one-to-one performances in the Louvre.
Absolutely. Couldn't get flying.
All right. So
if you frame it like that, you're not going to be talking to the people who are interested in talking to, you know, who are interested in having knotty, you know, chewy conversations. Yeah. And it took, you know. And also, we've probably got a 20, 30-year history of just doing things at people. Let's not be surprised when they just go, fuck that. You know, I can go on an Xbox and I can actually be directly engaged in making something different, even if it's within parameters. I have agency within this. Mm. And we've created spaces in which people don't have agency.
That's really important.
Palaces of lack of agency is what we've created. And, you know, and that's really weird.
That's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, the social media and, you know, just the internet has changed how we deal with the world. And we expect agency in really profound ways because of those things.
Yeah.
And we, you know, the theatre world, and, you know, all the funding, all the buildings, all the virtual building. The whole bloody system's designed to passivity. Yeah. And to build passivity. And, you know, and that's historically, I mean, unfortunately, my degree was sort of history of theatre rather than anything else. I was gutted at the time, gutted that it wasn't more practice-based, but actually it's been so bloody useful. Yeah. This passive, you know, receiver of your art thing is such a specific time frame historically, such a, you know, specific one. And all the spaces that we've built around that, you know, we perceive that it will never change. Well, this is the weird bit, actually. This is the bit where we spun off somewhere else and need to
because the spin the back. Thing this the reason that this exists is for all these people to be active.
Yeah,
that's the entire reason that as a society created it.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's a really nice place to stop.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.